Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 77.
This week on the podcast, we take a look at the direct correlation between our indecisive Syria policy and the French ego.
Plus, revisionist histories of 9/11 are all the rage as the Three Stooges of the Tea Party hit the airwaves live from Egypt.
And we've got this month's job numbers. Stay tuned for next month's report that these reports were false.
As the primary campaigns in New York hit their final stride, Bloomberg announces that most of the electorate are just a bunch of moochers anyway.
And we've got This Week in Secessionist Movements.
Plus, gun rights are blindly taken to their logical extreme in Iowa.
All this and more. Plus, don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Instagram. This is Brain Trust Live.
Well, it's a good thing that we waited a day to do the podcast, because it's finally not 700 degrees
outside. Oh my god, I was like, walked out of work tonight and I was like, dare I say that it's cold out? Meanwhile, it's not, but it's like just been oppressively hot lately. So
right. It's at least sort of not like,
we would have passed out talking about Syria yesterday, probably. We still may.
Just we might.
Just being blue in the face about it.
But. Exactly. But we're not going to pass out because of heat stroke.
No, we're not.
So the first hurdle to us talking about Syria has been cleared.
In fact, I'm even drinking coffee right now.
He's drinking.
And not just any coffee. I'm drinking a pumpkin spice latte, which is back.
Brent.
That's the lead story on the podcast this week.
Brent claims that this was a news story in every major news story.
It was. People were talking about it.
He was like, people were talking about it. And I was like, in what media sources? And he was like, all of them.
It was a news story.
According to who?
I don't know. Me.
According to Brent.
And my excitement over it.
Yeah.
But it's my first one because you can't have one any other time up until now because it was too hot.
Certainly not. No.
Some other news, in case anybody cares. The U.S. Open happened
today. I thought that maybe you would care.
I did care.
Oh, good.
I watched both of them. I watched the Serena match yesterday, which she tried very hard to lose, and then
just couldn't do it.
Not. And then I watched the Nadal match at work today. streaming on usopen.org.
While doing hard work in the field of promotions.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's what was happening.
Yeah.
So, anyway, real news.
Syria.
Oh, God.
It's all Syria.
We were trying to sort of, like, sequence the events of the last week and put them in order and try and figure out how we were going to talk about them. And we were like, how do we order these, like, 50 Syria stories that we have to be talking about?
It's like, Three trillion God. Of them. It starts on Wednesday, where the Senate Foreign Relations Committee approves a resolution that authorizes the U.S. military to take action. They're sending the matter to debate before the full Senate. The committee votes, it's a pretty close vote in the committee. It's 10-7.
It was a bipartisan vote on both the 10 and the 7.
Literally zero people know what they're supposed to be doing about this. It's a really tough one.
They can't figure it out.
Basically, Obama has like stolen a Republican favorite and now they don't want to support him,
right.
But they love bombing shit.
This is what, you know, being sort of basically a pacifist makes it really easy to sort of like know what I think about this.
Right.
I don't have to sit around and be like, oh God, I'm a Democrat. Am I supposed to support the press? No.
Exactly. Like that, we know that we're against it because we are against all military intervention.
Right.
But it's hard if you are a sort of political body who exists in the middle anywhere and belongs to a party. Because Brent and I don't owe anything to a party that's, like, also somehow, like, helping us get votes for other things.
No, but
if you're a senator and you're a Democrat or a Republican, you have all of these competing interests to deal with. And there's no good answer here because really any action that you take is the wrong one.
Yeah.
So, in any case, it's going before the Senate. I think it's expected to pass the Senate. But that may not matter because it may not pass in the House. The House doesn't have the votes
yet. And the Senate is still actually sort of a little wishy-washy. And we also, I think, heard that Rand Paul may sort of offer a filibuster on it. And he offered an amendment in the committee that didn't pass, but it was basically about making sure that Obama would not go to war if it wasn't passed, if the resolution wasn't passed in Congress. And that didn't make it out of there. Because a lot of people were worried about that. Like, if Congress doesn't approve this, is he still going to go just because he can?
Exactly. So. Yeah. And I'm currently only like 25 senators have even gone on the record about what they think in the first place. And there's more people in the House have gone on the record, but 238 of them are planning to vote no. And only 41 are planning to vote yes. There's 154 undecided. So currently it doesn't look like they really are going to have the votes to pass the resolution.
No. You know, this is sort of like, I love that it's just personally because I don't agree with, you know, the resolution. I'm glad that it may not pass.
Right.
But I also just feel like, man, politically, that really just sucks for him.
Totally.
Like, he probably thought this was a freaking slam dunk. Like, if you can't get the Republicans to just go arbitrarily bombing someone.
Like, what can you get them to do?
What can you do?
Nothing, it turns out. Nothing
exactly
at all.
Exactly nothing. I mean, it's just like,
he can't even get them to do...
He has to just be sort of like scratching his head. Well, not scratching his head, he's probably pulling his hair out. But I mean, like, just really? Like, you can't get a batshit crazy Republican House to, like, go on a bombing spree with you?
Right, like, what else are they even up to over there? They're literally not voting for anything at this point.
No, I know.
There's nothing... Like, we
You'd
know
think
that
a war resolution they could get behind.
Would be the one thing... We know that they now believe their job is to be obstructionist. We know that that is what their goal is
right.
as a body. But you would think that the one standby that you
right.
could really unite some crazies over
yeah.
would be indiscriminate bombing.
Yeah.
In any situation. Anything that asserts America's dominance abroad would be... Normally, right up their tree, or right up their alley.
right,
they bark,
sure,
you bark up a tree, you right up an alley. I got confused. But in any case, this has really put them in a bind. So they're going with a new tactic where they try to pretend like this is somehow related to Iran.
Yes.
So now instead of them saying that we need to intervene in Syria to, you know, show them that chemical weapons are not okay.
Right.
Now we're doing it to show Iran that chemical weapons aren't okay and that we will not stand idly by while people just flaunt international law left, right, and center and build nuclear weapons. Basically.
Right.
This was a sort of last-minute attempt by the White House chief of staff to sort of... He was talking to David Gregory, man-child syndrome boy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
About it, and he was basically like, this is an opportunity to be bold with the Iranians.
But see, this is the thing, like, I get why to them that makes sense. But sure. reasoning like this is why this thing smells fishy, I think,
exactly.
to people. Because
yeah, it's not
it
helping
just,
sell it.
It's not helping sell it, even if it's true, because I think that, like, the whole thing about this is that, you know, whether it's fair or not, this just smells like the run-up to the Iraq War.
Yeah.
Just in the sense that, like, they're going on the media blitz. They're tying this to that. And they've got all this intelligence that sort of, like, isn't necessarily corroborated.
Well, and they're sort of fishing for excuses at this point to go. There's not, like,
right.
there's not a compelling reason that we've acted on quickly.
Right.
And I was talking a lot about this weekend. I was at a wedding with a bunch of my friends, and a lot of them work in D.C. And the sort of general consensus there was not, you know, they're not pacifists like I am, all of them. So they are not just actively against all military interventions.
Right.
But a lot of them felt like the sort of waiting game wasn't really doing us any favors, because if we were going to make the point, we needed to make the point. And if we're not going to make the point, we look silly.
Right.
In any case, there is a website, because my mom's been sending me a lot of stuff about finding
oh, yes.
out where
posted
my,
this, I
she's
think,
posted
actually,
this,
too,
yeah.
Yes.
Finding out where your representatives stand on the issue, because it's not clear where they might, you, there's no way
no,
to guess
you,
what they
no,
might be, where they might stand.
Yeah, you can't know by party what they're
going to
do. You
can't know by party
John
or
Boehner
political.
And John Boehner and Eric Cantor are supporting this, by the way.
Yeah, I mean,
so it's like,
what a mystery.
Whoa.
But NAP's Talking Points memo has like a sort of where does your rep stand on Syria thing. It's sort of interesting to look
it
at
is.
Because it's a really surprising sort of breakdown. And we will post that for you.
Yeah, I was surprised that Adam Schiff, ours,
right.
was listed as undecided.
I know.
Because I sort of would have, he voted for the Iraq War.
Yeah,
he
he's
a blue dog.
He's
considered
a blue dog.
He's probably been acting a little more progressive
he's had to,
of
yeah.
late. But I was sort of surprised that he was in the undecided column.
I was as well.
Because I figured that he would have been, I mean, once you're voting for the Iraq War, I mean, what's stopping you here?
Right.
I mean,
certainly this isn't less convincing.
That was way more fake than this is.
Exactly.
I mean,
no, but he's been really trying to not lose his seat by being
well,
an asshole.
Yeah,
because he's got his district is really new.
Yeah.
This is a very different kind of district than his old district.
Yeah.
He can't be just indiscriminately
this
voting
is,
for bombing shit.
This is no Altadena.
This is no Altadena.
Wherever that is.
Meanwhile, the French president has been
yeah.
getting a lot of backlash
and
about his sort of early support for this.
It's not helping the United States by waiting on this, and
it's really
not helping France.
Yeah.
Because
They've been sort of on like a satire blitz where
yes,
they're sort
have.
Of equivalent of The Daily Show was making fun of him for being sort of like under Obama's thumb, basically.
Right.
They had
which was a thing that was happening with Tony Blair and George Bush a lot too. He was sort of like catching a lot of the same sort of like this is a sort of like
totally,
similar
yeah.
situation.
It's a similar situation. There's later in the show they had like a thing where it was sort of like a kind of comic type thing where he's where the French president, Hollande, is seen interrupting a visit to a school to ask Obama if he can use the bathroom.
Right.
And basically, I mean, what's funny about this is that this really you know, 2/3 of the French oppose military action anyway. Right. But what this is really sort of about is, like, French pride, because they don't like to be seen as, like, followers, specifically when it comes to the U.S.
Right. What happened was Hollande came out in favor of the strike before Obama said that he was going to take the vote to Congress.
Exactly.
And because Obama had been so sort of, like, gung-ho, I mean, it surprised everybody in America that he decided to take it to Congress, but it certainly surprised the French as well. And so now what has happened is that they are seen as sort of having to wait on America to make a decision before exactly. they can actually do anything. Right. And everybody's mad because it's sort of like, well, why the fuck do we have to wait on the American Congress to exactly. decide whether we're going to go bomb Syria or not? So, and plus, they don't even want to do it in the first place. So it's like, well, first off, we don't want to do it.
Right.
Second off, America's
screwing us right now. We certainly don't want to wait on America to
yeah.
do it.
So,
But third off, they can't really do it themselves. So it's sort of a tough game for them. They don't like to be sort of reminded of that as France.
Right. Can you imagine if France just started
just like independently was like upholding, I will uphold this international norm if it kills me.
Like if there was a French, like, bombing raid on Syria tomorrow, just unilaterally.
Just to show them.
That would
just
be,
to show.
I mean, it wouldn't be hilarious,
the reason
but it would
that
sort of just
France has interest here because this is all, this region is a former French colony.
Right, exactly.
This is why they're invested in a way that Britain is not. You know, Britain has their own colonies over there that they've totally screwed up. But this was France's issue to screw up.
Yeah.
So that's sort of why they're invested. I was surprised. John Kerry was there over the weekend and
speaking French.
Delivered a speech in French.
It's impressive.
He speaks French.
The French love
I
that,
thought
too.
That you have to speak Spanish if you're going to speak a foreign language as a public figure.
Maybe he speaks multiple.
Because it sounds so pretentious that he would speak French.
I know, exactly.
I mean, he's that pretentious, like, but like,
that's the thing that
he's that guy.
Republicans are probably going to, at some point, latch
be
on
hating,
to that.
Yeah, totally. Don't be speaking French as the American Secretary
Only
of State.
Only hippie gay socialists speak
exactly.
French.
Hippie gay socialists and waspy, know, like, boarding school educated Massachusetts elites.
Uh-huh.
Yep. All of the worst kinds of people, French
exactly.
speakers. But basically, this has been a major controversy in France, and then the U.S. has sort of like had, the U.S. sort of changed the game again today.
Right.
Because Kerry delivered a speech today where he went to a press conference today where somebody asked him what Assad could do to shut this whole thing down.
Right.
And Kerry said, well, if he got rid of all of his chemical weapons
right.
and turned them over to the international community and let inspectors in, then that would be fine. But he's not going to do it.
Right.
And suddenly the Russians were like, well, we could do that. Maybe we'll
right.
do that. Like, suddenly everyone latched onto it as if, and it sounded very, like, I haven't heard the quote, but in reading the quote and sort of the way it broke down, it sounded very, like, nonchalant, like he was just sort of, like, riffing off the top of his head. I'm sure someone must have vetted that approach.
I think so, too. And I think supposedly what I read was that he supposedly some sort of like deal like this was
already in the works,
floated at the G20.
Yes,
like between
because Obama was
there last week. So
the
details of the deal were sort of like not finalized or figured out or anything. But I think that they both sort of like had discussed that if that happened, then that could be a thing. But
it was weird the way that he delivered the comment because
yes,
he followed it with, but he's not going to do it.
He's not going to do it. And then a couple hours later,
Putin
like,
was like, well,
the Russian defense minister, or whoever it was. Yeah. And someone from Syria basically said the same thing. Like, yeah, we're open to that.
Yeah.
So it's sort of almost as if,
I mean, it smells maybe like a sort of, you know, waiting strategy, which I'm fine with. If we want to push back bombing them until it's totally ineffective and we don't have to do it,
well,
then
I say
go for it.
The longer the longer it goes, not only would it seem to be sort of like less effective, but also I think that any sort of political sort of will there is currently for this, which is not much anyway, dwindles by the hour, I think.
Exactly.
I mean, if you're waiting weeks to vote on whether we're going to bomb them or not, like, we'll already be concerned about, you know, shutting down the government over Obamacare or something. I mean, like, nobody will care whether we've decided to bomb Syria or not. You know, everybody has short attention spans.
Exactly. Well, and if this doesn't feel sort of, like, really important to do right away, then it's not important enough to do.
Well, right.
Because it's not like, once you've waited a really long time to send a message through bombing, like, your message is sort of lost in the,
totally.
In the sort of fuzz of everyone talking about what the purpose of bombing people to send a message is.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Assad granted his first interview to the American press in like 2 years.
Yes.
To Charlie Rose.
Which I think it's actually on probably as we are
speaking. Yeah, I think
right
so.
Because it's on tonight.
who I guess is sort of a vaguely non-threatening person. The last time he spoke to American Press, it was to Barbara Walters.
I know.
Like, what did they talk about?
I think there was a link floating around a while ago from that interview where they were chatting about like his favorite movies and like what's on his iPod and like was like no.
It was all like fluff. She asked him a couple of questions surrounded by fluff, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
So obviously,
well, he hadn't started. He was like just beginning to like starting to kill all of his citizens at that point. So there wasn't quite as much to talk about at that point. You could talk about what's
less newsy.
Charlie Rose isn't going to ask him what's on his iPod.
No, I don't believe that Charlie Rose listens to music or has interests.
It's a sneaking suspicion that I have.
Too boring. Exactly. Yeah, he's if you need to send someone boring and sort of not controversial into a war zone to interview a dictator who's potentially killing all of his citizens through the illegal use of chemical weapons.
Well, and potentially killing journalists, too. And a lot of journalists killing. Too, like 30 journalists too.
Then you send Charlie Rose.
Nobody's going to kill Charlie Rose.
No, no one cares enough to kill Charlie Rose. Charlie Rose is safe by just being himself.
Yep. That's right.
Meanwhile, Ted Cruz thinks that the Syria talk is really just a distraction tactic to keep us from remembering the Benghazi attacks.
Oh, right.
Benghazi.
Of course, that's what it is.
Yes. A civil war is going on in Syria right now just to distract us from Benghazi. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what they're doing over there. Oh. Assad has been, you know, asked to sort of do some illegal stuff, mm-hmm. maybe like buy some chemical weapons from the Russians or whatever, so that we don't remember about the horrors of the four people that died in Benghazi.
Right.
Ted Cruz fails to mention, because he's talking about because the anniversary of Benghazi is coming up.
Yeah, it's on Wednesday.
What he fails to mention is that the anniversary of Benghazi is the anniversary of 9/11,
right.
Which is an attack that maybe could have been more effectively harnessed to make his point.
Yes, exactly.
Because he goes on in this, he made a statement where he goes on about how we're distracting because four Americans were killed in Benghazi, and including the first ambassador since 1979. He goes on this whole thing, like, thousands of people died on 9/11. The Benghazi attack was designed to take place on the date of 9/11 as part of its symbolism.
Yes.
So he sort of missed the whole boat there.
I know.
He's not a great point maker.
He's not at all. But you know what else I learned about the reason why this Syria thing is going on? I told you this last week. Remember, we haven't talked about my crazy aunt's Facebook page. Do you remember? It's because Obama wants to send all of the troops away because he's going to decide to go all martial law on us while they're gone. And then sort of take over the country, which is odd.
He's going to be able to do this without troops.
Right. He's ended two wars, so all the troops are back home. So that's not really, it doesn't make any sense.
It's not a strategy so far.
We're only sending basically like three fighter jets over to Syria in the first place. So
those are not the three fighter jets that are going to make the difference between martial law and no martial law.
So, I mean,
it's curious
some of the reasoning with the Republicans
that they would think that the U.S. government takeover was going to happen without a military when the only means by which Obama would have to declare martial law would be using the military.
Yes. Who's he going to use?
Who is going to be the martial lawyers?
No one knows.
No one knows.
No.
Regular citizens like you and me. The gun-wielding citizens of America.
Mm-hmm. Well, that stream of conscience
was the craziest
thing. Because it started as railing on Obamacare.
Yeah, well, that's where it always starts.
We should put this on our Facebook page because it was insane.
Very entertaining.
It was crazy. But anyway, she compared it to Hitler. There was a lot of...
Oh, yeah. She really went...
There are constant American concentration camps.
Yes, I don't know if you knew about this. Because I didn't.
No.
Certainly. I still am not sure I do.
No.
But that's happening.
Anyway.
Speaking of Obamacare, things are so terrible that the GOP was forced to neglect that the Syria situation is happening at all in their weekly address because the exchanges are opening on October 1st, and they needed to make sure people knew about the evils of Obamacare.
Yes. And not only did they... First off... I don't even know what first off is. It's so crazy that they would not talk about Syria. But beyond that, what they said is that basically, this is so crazy. They said, the quote was, "The American people have a choice. We can embrace the status quo of Obamacare for four more years."
It hasn't started yet, so it's not the status quo.
"Or we can repeal the law and quickly move to help people get the care they need from a doctor they choose at a lower cost," which is what Obamacare does. That's what the Republicans are fighting for.
Is it?
It is.
Like...
Really?
In using what policies? In what way?
But
is that is, in fact, the A, exact the opposite of what
they're
fighting for. But not only that, it is exactly what Obamacare does. So he just sold the idea of Obamacare.
Well, Republicans are accidentally selling Obamacare.
Well, they have to. It's their own policy.
I know.
They loved it enough to propose it in the first place.
But they do it sometimes when they don't mean to, though. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they'll sort of... That's the thing that we've reported on a lot, is when they accidentally say something like in favor of Obamacare and they don't even realize they've done it because they don't know what they're fighting against in the damn bill anyway. So.
No, exactly. they have the issue of Obamacare does a lot of good things, but it's all things that are so like non-controversial that there's not a way to have a talking point about healthcare without accidentally promoting something that it does. So any time that they try to promote their own, quote, policy, which is just the opposite of what they sort of are trying to make people think Obamacare does, they basically are forced to endorse a portion of Obamacare because Obamacare doesn't do anything radical that they can, like, actively sort of, like, say, you know, they can't be like, it forces everyone to get government health care and now you're all going to be at the whim of government bureaucrats. Like, it doesn't do that.
Right.
It just lowers the cost of health insurance and then lets you choose a doctor. Like, that's all it does. So basically, there's no way to fight against it. It's lowest common denominator of things that like any bill could possibly do for us.
Right.
In any case, it's insane.
A few more serious stories that sort of aren't directly related to it, but the crazies are out. The Christian crazies because
end times.
The end times are coming.
As always.
Every time there is a situation in the Middle East, basically like from the beginning of time. It's because it's the second coming of Christ, basically.
So, he has been taking his damn time.
I mean, some serious time. Especially when we've had all the signs of the end times for the last 2,000 years.
All of them.
What? Every year.
Every year we have them.
But anyway.
You would think that the end times would have happened at least when there were wars happening, like, in the holy sites that they were, like, waiting for. Like, the fact that Israel's at war with everyone should have been a sign that end times were happening 50 years ago.
Right.
Meanwhile, this isn't even happening in Israel. This is happening in Syria, which is not where all of the holy sites that they're waiting to have things happen are.
No, but there's a Bible verse in Isaiah that says, behold, Damascus is about to be removed from being a city and will become a fallen ruin. And people are talking about, and that is sort of like, I guess, one of the signs, like in Isaiah's prophecy or something, that like the end times are coming. But it's sort of like...
I have a bold prediction.
First off, why are all of the Christians need to decide what the end times are and what they entail. Because
they also,
sort of like, they don't know. And so here we're referencing like a story from Isaiah, which is in the Old Testament, which is obviously not Revelations. And it's not even sort of like what the Christian religion is founded on. So I'm not discounting all of it because it's in the Bible. But I mean, like,
no, but
you're discounting all of it.
I'm discounting all of it anyway.
Right. Yeah. No, exactly. But I mean, it's just sort of like they need to collectively decide what the end times
are. Here's what I think that they should do. They should collectively agree that the end times are something sort of that's already happened so that we can just be in the end times. And that way it's over. They don't have to keep predicting it. They don't have to keep being proven wrong. They
can
reaffirm their faith knowing that the end times have happened just as they were predicted to happen in the Bible.
Right. Or they can do as I have done as a Christian and just
ignore that part of the Bible.
Write off all of the prophecies of the end times as batshit crazy dreams that some loony people in the Bible were having.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I've done.
I have effectively written off the entire Bible on that basis.
I know you have.
It hasn't bothered me one bit.
Yeah. Anyway. I haven't done that, but I still feel like it's okay to write off, Isaiah's visions and
I think in a book that contradicts itself as much as the Bible does, you can write off any portion that you want.
You just pick.
Evangelical Christians do it all the time.
Hello.
I have a bold prediction, which is that Damascus will survive this civil war and continue to be a city.
Probably so. Yeah, it's not going to be wiped from the map.
No. No. It may not be as pretty a city or as great shopping
which is
of
sad,
a city.
Probably.
It's, I mean, Damascus, when you're in Beirut, everyone talks about how sad it is that Syria is falling apart because Damascus is where all the great shopping is.
Right.
And currently there's not great shopping in Damascus because of this situation. So that's been too bad for residents of Lebanon. It's certainly too bad for people that live in Damascus or care about Damascus in a sort of personal way because it's never happy when a city is being destroyed.
Right.
But I predict that people will continue to live in Damascus even after this is over.
Ditto. And in final Syria news...
people don't care.
No. If you thought that everyone was going around just really clicking away on Syria stories and
then
getting
informed
about...
Then you live in Washington, D.C.
Right, exactly. And that's not the case because there was bigger news over the last couple weeks that was not about Syria. And it was about Miley Cyrus trashily twerking her way across the VMAs.
Twerking with air quotes, P.S. because there's not any way that constitutes non-air-quoted twerking.
No, not at all. because she is getting, what is it, like 12 to 1 in clicks or something? Like this company that like collects sort of like clicks from websites or something like that to sort of, you know, give stats and stuff.
There were 2.4 Serial articles published for every story about Miley. Right. But she was getting 12 times as many clicks.
Right, exactly.
I probably was sent 12 times as many links the next day about this.
Well, obviously.
I mean, this is like, I feel like this is all anyone's been talking about.
I mean, it was exciting.
I've also been forced to watch it at 3 different people's houses.
Why?
Like, everyone needs to show the people that haven't seen it yet.
It's like, who hasn't seen it?
Well, people are finding people who haven't seen it. They're inviting them to their houses. They're inviting me over. And then they're forcing me to watch it again. It's been horrifying. Because performance does not get less horrifying the more you watch it. Even though I know what's coming up.
Yeah.
Every time it happens, I sort of like can't... I'm like shocked in a physical way by the fact that she can't seem to put her tongue back in her mouth.
No.
And then,
oh, I know.
That doesn't even... I mean, then the horrors begin after that. But like that's the first... that's the first sign that things are going downhill. And I'm already at a full shocked level.
Now, the horrors continued today. Did you hear about this? She released her video for Wrecking Ball.
And she's like naked in it. But she's got a terrible bikini tan.
She's riding around on a wrecking ball naked.
Yeah, you shouldn't be doing that. It's not safe. But there's also... She did not tan in an appropriately full way for it.
She's just so...
She's got tan lines.
Disgusting.
Don't have tan lines.
No.
You're a fucking pop star.
Get a fake tan.
Get a fucking fake tan. For God's sakes, people. Even I know that. I'm not a pop star. These are things that I know. But also, don't be on a wrecking ball naked ever.
Nope.
Don't do it. Mm-mm. It's not safe. It's not what you want.
Certainly don't film yourself doing it.
No. You need to do it. Make sure no one's watching.
Privacy of your own home.
Exactly. Meanwhile, speaking of other people who should be only doing things in the privacy of their own home, Michelle Bachmann, Louis Gohmert, and Steve King.
That is a trio right there.
That's a trio from Looney Town. They were, all in Egypt, which, like, don't travel together, for God's sakes.
No.
What a convoy.
And who let them in, by the way?
Who let them out? Who let them around? Like, why were they even allowed to leave the country, the safety, where we keep an eye on them at least?
And why did they go other than to have this ridiculous press conference? Because they gave a doozy of a press conference.
Oh, yes. They went to basically talk about how much they love the coup. They went to go, like, be friendly to the new coup people.
Right. And also talk about how the Muslim Brotherhood...
caused 9/11.
Caused 9/11.
Yeah. Because they, like the Egyptians, know about the horrors of the Muslim Brotherhood. Because of the Muslim Brotherhood's non-existent role in 9/11, the Muslim Brotherhood, in fact, condemned 9/11 when it happened. They may be crazy, but they're not 9/11 crazy.
No, they're not jihadists.
They're not jihadists.
Sort of like they're a brand of crazy.
They're the evangelical Christians of Egypt.
Yeah, exactly.
They're a little crazy.
Yes.
But they're not trying to commit, you know, terrible acts of violence against other countries and things like that. That's not what they're up to.
No.
They're up to trying to prevent women from doing fun things and other stuff like that. It's a very they have a narrower set of goals.
Exactly.
In any case, unlike Ted Cruz, who couldn't seem to remember that the Benghazi anniversary is also the anniversary of 9/11.
Right.
They were there to reference 9/11 at the appropriate time.
Yes.
You know that 3,000 brave Americans died on 9/11 at the hands of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yes.
It was one of the most tragic fake events that ever occurred.
I know. God, why didn't we bomb Egypt?
Right. I mean, there's so many... If it's the Muslim Brotherhood that's responsible, we did a lot of things wrong.
We should have just, to be safe, bombed every country in the Middle East.
Or the world. I mean, we don't know.
No.
They flew here from Germany or whatever. You know, the 9/11 flyers came from all sorts of places. We couldn't have possibly known where they were coming from.
No.
We knew and we let them in the country knowingly, but but we didn't know. So in any case, during their sort of pro-coup press conference, they basically let on that not only did they not understand what the coup was, or what was happening, but they also, at some point, referenced George Washington.
Yeah, they not only do they not have a great reference of what happened on 9/11, they don't have a great reference for what happened in the...
The Revolutionary War. I could tell them about, because I am currently obsessed with the Revolutionary War.
Lila and I both have a great understanding on it through sort of...
Fictional accounts of what happened in Brent's case. And in my case, a very narrow story about six spies that George Washington hired during the Revolutionary War to spy on the British.
Yeah.
And that's all you need to know. We, at least from those, know enough to know that the general who is now leading Egypt is no George Washington.
No.
That said, Michelle Bachmann didn't get the memo.
No, she did not.
Now, mm-hmm. now we know.
And I think this is our last international story, which is sort of ridiculous.
The greatest one.
There's an Islamist rebel group in the Philippines mm-hmm. called the Moro Islamic Liberation Front. And they go by MILF. Which is hilarious because... Because
they are featured in news stories as MILF.
Where they are called that. And someone... Some kind person at BuzzFeed collected a lot of the headlines of the MILF group, and some of them are pretty great. MILF demands military pullout. This is my favorite one, actually. MILF kills four, frees as many. Defense chief hits MILF for breaking ceasefire. And MILF signs peace with the government. And it just sort of goes on and on and on about, change your name.
Change your name. Immediately.
You've got to do it. I realize... You might have to rebrand yourself a little bit because you've been going by MILF for a while, but you gotta know. You have to know.
Maybe this has been great PR for them.
Perhaps. Yeah, that's true.
I was talking to somebody years ago about how to generate clicks on a blog I was writing that no one was reading, which is what all the blogs I've ever written have been like. And they were like, you need to use, there are these like tags that you can use that are invisible. And you have to write like sex words in the tags. Like you gotta write like sex, boobs, like things like that in the tags because that's what generates clicks. Like people search for those terms more frequently than any other terms, and they will click on any dumb website that they find in the process.
Right.
And I feel like MILF is probably one of those terms. They probably have a great web presence because of this. It's probably impossible to Google them, but it's probably impossible to not find them if you're Googling MILFs. And it's especially wonderful when they have great headlines like MILF demands military pullout. Someone is searching for a porn film by that name right now and is finding their way to the Moro Liberation Islamic Front or whatever.
Right.
Islamic Liberation Front. It's probably the only reason that they're like on the internet to begin with.
Probably. Yeah.
So I say go for it.
Oh God, we're finally done with
international news.
That was I can almost guarantee you that was the most international news.
Definitely the most
done.
International
right?
news. Yeah. That's because it was all the domestic news this week was about international
that.
News.
Yeah, exactly.
So it unfortunately
unless you were giving the Republican Weekly address.
Right. In which case Obamacare is a mess, guys. Yeah. And it's going to ruin America.
Oh, gosh. We have more fake jobs numbers. Because I don't understand why they release these when they release them when they don't know if they're right.
But
anyway,
wait,
it's so
another month.
Annoying because, like, that was like, so, okay, the jobs numbers weren't as great as we thought they were going to be. It was 169,000 jobs, but, like, more people are, like, out of the workforce now. And it's sort of like the same jobs report that you get every single month.
Right.
None of that is interesting to me.
No.
The only thing that was interesting in the article about the jobs report number was that June and July have been revised lower by a total of 74,000 jobs.
So here's...
That's like by a fifth.
Yeah.
These jobs numbers are made up.
They're made up. I currently am predicting that the November jobs numbers will be that we add 170,000 jobs, roughly,
mm-hmm.
that some people will drop out of the workforce. Right. So the unemployment rate will either stay the same or tick down a tiny percent. But that we will still have the smallest participation of the labor force since, like, the 60s
or
the 70s.
Or whatever it is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then 2 months later, we'll find out that we really added either 300,000 jobs or 7 jobs. And that the unemployment rate is actually, like, 25%.
Right.
And
or 4.
Or 4%. We don't know. It's impossible to know what the actual figures will be. But I predict that the November jobs numbers will be that when they're first released.
Right. Well, and I will also predict that they will be wrong when they're first released.
Yes. You will be correct. We'll both be correct.
Yeah, exactly.
Because these are meaningless. And it's impossible to know how the economy is doing because there's no actual... The economy is fake. There's no facts and figures that can support whether or not it's doing well. It's not even a real concept. So if it's doing well or not, is it relevant?
Mm-hmm.
If you are doing well, that's relevant.
Right.
And you're probably not because it doesn't seem like shit's going well.
No.
But we'd love to hear about it if you are.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Meanwhile... New York City mayoral campaign.
It's tomorrow.
It's tomorrow.
Right?
The primary is tomorrow.
The primary is tomorrow.
I was at a wedding with a bunch of friends from New York, so it's all I talked about
all
weekend.
Are they voting for de Blasio?
They better be.
You didn't force them?
I mean, currently most of my friends live in D.C. now. So only a few of them were voting in New York. I got to them real quick.
Yeah.
They seeked me out. They were like, you know who's going to know who's been following the campaign, I bet?
Right.
Lila.
Uh-huh.
Let's ask her.
Yeah.
So in any case, I did my best sales pitch.
Good work.
But Bloomberg had a big, caused a big kerfluffle this week because he was giving a quote about de Blasio, I think to New York Magazine, but I'm not positive.
And I think you're right.
Sort of like went on this like weird rant about how de Blasio's campaign is based on class warfare and is racist.
Right.
Because de Blasio is like, whose wife is black, and so he's been sort of using his family and his campaigning,
right,
like all people do.
Every single person...
It's not like he was like, you're black, so I'm going to need you to campaign with me. Like, everyone's wife campaigns with them.
Yeah, of course.
It has been, quote, making an appeal using his family to gain support. I think it's pretty obvious to anyone watching what he's been doing. I do not think de Blasio himself is racist. It's comparable to me pointing out I'm Jewish and attracting the Jewish vote. But then he sort of went on about how de Blasio's, you know, de Blasio uses a lot of rhetoric about there being two cities because New York City is basically just rich and poor people now. There's like no regular people left in New York City.
And he's doing the
divisive, and then goes on and says something like, if it's two cities, it's because one group is paying for services for the other. OMG.
I can't believe he said that.
I can't believe he called him racist, and then he said that. It was like,
I know.
What are you doing, guy?
I know. Seriously. I have not been following this as close as you have. I mean, we've been reporting on it a lot, but I can imagine this whole two city situation. If I was there, I would be
eating
so
it up.
Into the de Blasio.
Eating
because
it up.
I was reading something on Politico the other day where they were talking about like how a lot of people are sort of like seeing a similar thing to the sort of like Obama Clinton campaign and sort of like the rhetoric that is coming out of here. But like that to me like reeks of the Edwards campaign that I was just sort of like touching myself over.
It's
like
very populist.
Basically. Like it's the two Americas.
Yeah.
It is. It's
it's
Edwards. He just changed it to cities.
Yeah.
I mean,
he knows what's up.
Yeah.
He's going to hopefully not be cheating on his wife and having, you know, love child.
Right. Exactly.
As long as he doesn't do that, I maintain that Edwards would have done better.
Ditto.
Had he not.
Yeah.
But in any case, yeah, I think his messaging has been really smart. And I think as a New Yorker, I'm certainly responding to it. I think probably anyone who lives in the city and isn't making $1 trillion a year feels like they're on the losing end of the two cities proposition.
Right.
The other people really aren't. There's not a lot of people who are on the gaining end of the two cities who are really that committed to New York in the long term, which is another thing. Like this kind of message is really tailored to sort of like the kind of New Yorkers that kind of stick it out. And those New Yorkers are not currently making zillions of dollars.
Right. Sure.
So I think that this is probably for what the actual electorate is, like a very smart message to be using. It's a message that Anthony Weiner was touching on as well in going on sort of about how there's not really room for the middle class anymore in the city. I mean, that's basically the message that was gaining him the kind of popularity that he was gaining in the first place.
Right.
And Quinn represents a district that is made of the haves. I mean, I say that as someone who grew up in her district and don't feel like I have. But, I mean, Quinn's district as a whole, I mean, one of our issues in the district has been that it's gotten so wealthy. So our taxes went up and all this construction happened. And the people that were in the neighborhood in the first place kind of got left behind.
Yeah.
This is sort of like a good time to harness that because Quinn's benefactors are the haves.
Yeah.
They're not the have-nots. And, you know, if he can be the candidate of the have-nots, then that's great news. Cuomo, meanwhile, was sort of like not having Bloomberg's comment. He was kind of like, there are bigger issues. The bigger fish to fry over here than who's, you know.
And he has sort of stayed out of it.
Yeah.
To a degree. But was sort of asked about it and like mentioned
words. Stop and Frisk, which I was sort of excited about. Because I don't think of him as someone who'd be super anti-Stop and Frisk. I mean, he's he's kind of like not that liberal. Like,
well, sure. Yeah.
I mean, everyone hates Stop and Frisk. But I mean, like, Bloomberg doesn't. So I sort of think of Cuomo in the same breath as Bloomberg.
Yeah.
But he was sort of like, this is not, you know, this is a diverse city. We can't really be making statements like this as representatives of the most diverse city in the country.
Right, exactly.
So then
good for him.
New York Magazine suddenly published ads to Bloomberg's quote to make it sound like he was sort of hedging on whether or not he actually meant the word racist.
Right, which they were asked to do by Bloomberg.
Yeah, Bloomberg campaign was like, oh, it was a telephone interview, and you couldn't hear the quote, the end of the quote, which was basically him being like, no, but, like, that was basically the end of the quote.
Which doesn't negate what he's just said.
The sentiment of the quote.
No, it doesn't. That's like saying, like, JK at the end of something.
Totally.
When, like, you have just said something that you wholeheartedly mean, And it correct. Was, and it was rude.
Yeah. And then everyone looked at you in a shocked voice, and you realize it was rude, and you're like, sorry, I was kidding.
Yeah, that's the smiley emoticon, basically, exactly. of his quote right there. Yeah.
Totally.
Not buying it.
Not buying it. Yeah. So in any case, but Tuesday, guys, vote for de Blasio. I want him to win the primary with more than 40% so we can get rid of the menace of Quinn.
I have a feeling that a lot of people are going to go in and vote for him who are, even as of right now, still saying that they're going to vote for Wiener.
I'm sure there's
7 or 8% of people who are saying that they're still going to vote for Anthony Wiener, and I've got to believe at least a good solid half of those people are going to vote for de Blasio and not Quinn.
Yeah.
And not actually vote.
Yeah, I don't think if you're an Anthony Wiener voter that you're going to move to Quinn. That seems
I don't think Anthony Wiener is going to get what he's polling. I think those people are. He's one of those people. Like, you just can't really, in good conscience, sort of like go in and
Quinn vote is for him trying a crazy desperation tactic at the moment.
Yeah,
and having all of her supporters email everyone and tell them that a vote for de Blasio is a vote for LaHoda, who's the Republican candidate.
Probably going to be the Republican. Yeah.
Or is going to be the Republican candidate when he naturally wins the Republican primary right. because there's not really a competition there.
Right.
But that my mom got one of those emails and wrote like a real nasty email back because it was from her local Democrats club.
I think she posted on Facebook too.
Yeah.
Because I knew about this because I saw it on your mom.
Yeah. She's all over it.
Most of the information that I'm getting on this race
is from my mom's
Facebook feed. Yeah.
Yeah. She used to be a member of the Chelsea Democrats. That's the club that Quinn comes from. So obviously they're kind of like in for Quinn. I guess that rhymes, and they're probably using it.
They are.
Oh, that's what they're...
Okay. Yes, it is.
Well, that's a no-brainer, obviously.
Easy. Yeah, you just thought of it on the fly.
But...
Somebody got paid a lot of money to come up with that, probably from her campaign.
Could have been me.
Which is, I was going to say, why...
Why aren't they hiring us to do this stuff? Brent and I actually have often thought that we would be great at this kind of campaign work, like a campaign press work.
I just... Right. I mean, you came up with In for Quinn, and you're not...
And I'm not a professional.
You're not even the pun one of
exactly.
the two of us.
Exactly, I know.
Not that wasn't a pun, but I mean, like...
No, but Brent basically does this professionally, and I'm a genius, so
and
it seems like between the two of us...
Obviously, you could do it professionally. You just
clearly,
did it right now.
Clearly. Brent and I were coming up with taglines for some copy that I'm writing for another thing, and it was just like... Brent's like a really great tagline writer, but he's got like this crazy system where he like... You know, has like words that he comes. He's got like word trees going in his head, as far as I can tell.
No, that's absolutely what happened.
Which I did.
I also have to come up with a lot of really dumb ones first.
Well,
like,
you have
on
to.
Purpose.
Yeah.
Like honestly, like a lot of my good taglines come from like intentionally stupid things that I had to think of just to sort of like realize that it actually wasn't that stupid.
There was a brief...
because taglines are inherently stupid.
Yeah,
they're dumb.
You can't, if you're writing a tagline that's too smart. As I learned the hard way, when I wrote a genius tagline for something that I was writing for a promo.
Nobody got it. It was a
nobody
show
got
TLC,
it, even though it was
so it
a
was like...
genius tagline.
Yeah. No,
it was so frustrating.
You can't sell that.
No. They came up, they decided to go with the most obvious tagline in the whole world.
In for Quinn.
That's.
You can sell.
I can sell that.
Yeah.
But in any case, that's going on. And then also, a bunch of states are trying to secede still.
This is so good.
This is like sinkholes. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
It really is. And like... A couple, well, not a couple. One of them is not a suspect place, but I would not have thought that necessarily people from Maryland were trying to secede.
They're slightly suspect.
There are six counties in Maryland, and they go
by the Western Maryland Initiative, WMI.
And it's only 11% of the state's population. It would be about the size of D.C., basically, the number of people. But they're just sort of, you know, don't like that they're in the minority.
They're over it.
I mean, nobody does.
No.
But that's sort of...
I've often thought that wherever I am should secede from wherever else we are.
I know.
Like, why doesn't L.A. secede from the rest of California?
Yeah,
We've got millions of people here. We have more people than Wyoming.
I know. I wanted to secede when we passed Prop 8.
Yeah. I have often thought that New York City should secede from New York State so we can stop paying their fucking way.
Right.
Because they're so rude to us, and they vote against all of our interests, and then they take all our money.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, so that's going on in Maryland, and then in Texas...
They're ready to just get out of the whole country. Actually proposed, but I know, they could go.
They said, we're uniquely situated because we have energy resources, fossil and otherwise, and our own independent electrical grid.
Yeah, and this is from the Texas Railroad Commissioner, Barry Smitherman, which is
a
crazy name.
He's running for Attorney General.
So he's not sort of like a fake...
Some rando.
I mean, yeah.
Their Attorney General candidate is
Wants
a secessionist candidate.
Yeah.
It's like when Norman Mailer ran for mayor of New York on a secessionist platform.
But he said that Texas could be an independent, an island nation, if you will.
Let him. an island nation with no access to water, but they can just deal. They have that tiny little bit of coast.
Yeah, they've got some Gulf of Mexico. Yeah.
Meanwhile, if you're wondering whether it was smart to release George Zimmerman and not charge him with the murder of somebody that he clearly murdered.
I know. This is my...
Now you don't need to wonder anymore what he's going to be up to, because currently he's just up to violently threatening his estranged wife and her family.
Yes, exactly. She filed for divorce last week, and which, good on her.
Yeah.
Because
smart choice.
Turns out, you don't want to live with a murderer.
No,
I mean that's not what you would want to do. So anyway, but he apparently pulled a knife, and then he punched his father-in-law in the nose, and he pulled out his gun. And this was at her parents' house in Florida. And so
he was waving his gun around.
Waving his gun, he took. They called the police. He got arrested. He was taken into custody. But this is my favorite part of the story. On the call with the police, his soon-to-be ex-wife said, "Dad, get inside the house. George might start shooting at us. I'm really, really afraid. I don't know what he's capable of."
Do we not?
Really?
We know.
We don't know what he's capable
of? Pretty specifically what he's capable of.
He's capable of killing you all.
Yeah, that's
We know that based on
fact, based on history. Evidence, because he's done that before.
Just presumably at least one of the reasons why you're divorcing him is because you know what he's capable of.
Exactly. He'll
kill you.
He is, like he did with Trayvon Martin, claiming that he was acting in self-defense because...
From his wife, yes.
Because his wife was aggressively...
Yes.
...somethinging him. Not with a gun or knife or any sort of actual threats. No. Just with her presence.
Thank God he had both of those things on him.
Exactly. Because what would he have done otherwise with his wife?
With his
wife. And really staring at him and maybe yelling.
Right.
I mean, what do you do when a woman starts yelling at you?
Thank God he had the option
to
stand his ground.
Yes.
And potentially shoot her.
Yeah. Because of her aggressive...
Yeah.
You know, something. Her aggressive, nonviolent intervention.
She was probably nagging him.
Yeah. It's probably... I would imagine that someone who sort of feels comfortable shooting a teen who has Skittles after getting in their face...
Doesn't need much of a reason to shoot his wife.
Cool with shooting his wife for nagging him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
He could have used the same gun. It probably was the same gun because they gave it back.
Yeah, exactly. On a related note...
Yeah.
Oh, God. CNN continuing to do everything wrong. But they've hired his attorney, Mark... O'Mara, as a legal analyst.
Because he is great at getting around the law.
Exactly.
He's a guy, I guess he knows. Constitutional law scholar.
No.
But he certainly knows a lot about Florida law.
He does.
The kind of law that lets you shoot anybody in the face that you want.
Yep.
And on another similar note, Iowa this week...
Oh, God.
...is
My home
having,
state can't be doing this.
They're letting blind people carry guns because they have to, because the American with Disabilities Act tells them that they can't discriminate on the basis of physical disability.
Yes.
And, you know, apparently firearms aren't considered a loophole from that, despite the fact that cars and other dangerous things are.
Right.
So,
but cars aren't in the Second Amendment, though.
No, that's true. They did not say that blind people have the right to... That
bear
all
cars.
Americans have the right to bear cars.
No, they didn't.
But, I mean, I was talking about this with a friend of mine this weekend as well, and we were both sort of like... That is the best comparable sort of thing to talk about guns in comparison to is because it's because they're both dangerous and cars are sort of like inherently a part of our everyday life, so it's not threatening to talk about them in those terms. But cars are so regulated, like it seems like blind people are not allowed to drive cars.
No,
just as they should not be allowed to fire things. That only do dangerous, you know, unhelpful stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But there was one sheriff from Delaware. I don't even know where that is. I'm from Iowa. Where the hell is Delaware? It's a state. But apparently it's also in Iowa.
It's also in Iowa.
But the sheriff from there said, first off, there are Iowa has three legal designations of blindness.
Most places do.
Right, exactly. There's legally blind, functionally blind, and visually impaired.
Right.
And the sheriffs don't necessarily know
the
who's
difference.
What.
Yeah.
I mean, they can't sort of
They're
spot somebody
doctors.
Wandering around with a gun and being like, well, that guy's clearly legally impaired, but not
right.
not blind. So, anyway, but he said, I'm not an expert in vision. At what point do vision problems have a detrimental effect to fire a firearm? If you see nothing but a blurry mass in front of you, then I would say you probably shouldn't be shooting something. I think he's right.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if you can't make out the, like, physical features of the thing that you're aiming at...
That's bad. You shouldn't have a gun.
You shouldn't have a gun.
I am sort of glad that Iowa is taking the Americans with Disabilities Act so seriously.
Thank God, right? Who knew?
good for them.
Good for them. I'm sort of hoping that this is the beginning of a different type of discussion about guns that I've been waiting for, where we sort of can talk about where we can start chipping away at the Second Amendmenters by being like, guns, you know, like, it's one thing to say that all Americans can have guns. It's quite another to agree that Americans who cannot safely use guns can have guns.
Right.
Like, what we really need to prevent this from, so that you don't have to violate the Americans with Disabilities Act, you need a gun safety test to be in place before right. anyone can buy a gun. Like, there need to be hurdles to people, to just any old person getting a gun, where we can all agree that no person gets a gun if they can't, you know, if they can't safely, you know, take apart and put together their gun, if they can't,
right.
you know, if they can't safely shoot a target, if they can't do all of these things that will, at a certain point, make it possible to define guns as a dangerous weapon instead of just like a toy that everyone can have.
Right.
So I'm sort of hoping that this is the beginning of a different type of discussion.
Seems like it could
where
be.
Guns become regulated the way cars are regulated.
I saw a lot of people posting the story.
Yeah.
Today.
Well, this is crazy pants.
Yeah.
This is some crazy pants nonsense. And also, you know a lot of people from Iowa. Ugh. So between the two.
No, but they were not.
No, non-Iowans.
I saw non-Iowans posting this story.
It's so rare that non-Iowans think about Iowa. So this is real.
This was
a major story.
Yeah, this is a major story. I think we pulled the specific link that we got this quote from USA Today.
Yeah.
I'm almost certain. So, I mean,
it was
like,
in every news source that I read this week.
Around. Yeah. So maybe you're right.
But so that's what I'm hoping comes out of this.
Yeah.
So that we can start to make people have insurance for their guns and, you know, other stuff.
Yeah.
And can hopefully create guns that don't shoot things and are just mm-hmm. not yeah. functional. Because maybe we could just make it so that you don't have to. Maybe everyone can have a gun, but not everyone can have bullets. Like the Chris Rock.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, or maybe everybody suggestion could
just
of your.
If everybody just feels good walking around with a gun.
Yeah.
If let everybody em. Had. Yeah, exactly. Everybody could have prop guns. I've seen some really
very
good
realistic
prop guns.
Yeah.
Very realistic.
I would yeah. be happy to let anyone who wanted. I don't. You know, I think you should still not be pulling fake guns out in public and scaring everybody.
Probably not the greatest plan.
It's not a great plan, but I'm comfortable with everyone having non-functioning guns if it makes them feel good.
Sure.
I just feel like once bullets are in the guns, we don't want blind people shooting them. We don't want crazy people shooting them.
No.
We don't want any of the people.
No.
And also, aren't you allowed to not give gun permits to people that are mentally impaired? Isn't that?
Yeah, so, like, I think so, yeah.
Is blindness somehow different than that? That's a physical impairment, just like being mentally disabled. I mean, it's not the same kind of impairment,
well, right.
but it's still it's a physical impairment.
Right.
It's an impairment on your ability to use a gun safely.
It sure is.
For God's sakes, people.
Yeah.
In any case, one can only hope that the building for the blind around the corner from my parents doesn't catch wind of this in New York, because that's the last thing we need. We are glad that you're with us for our day late podcast.
Yes.
We will be back at our regular scheduled time next week,
right.
potentially with my friend Erica.
Oh, that's right. We may have a special guest next week.
Potentially not.
No.
It's hard to know.
We don't know.
But stay tuned to find out.
Right. Exactly.
We will post that link for you of the who's voting for Syria and who's not and where your senator, I mean,
yes.
where your congressman stands.
Exactly.
Because that's exciting. And we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.